Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Dr. Kiki's Science Hour with Dr. Kiki, episode 65, recorded Thursday, September 23rd, 2010. It's bad. Astronomy. Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. I am Dr. Kiki. This is episode 65. Can you imagine? If you've been listening to this since the beginning, that's 65 hours of science. That's right. It's an hour a week, usually with a single person, to talk about a single subject. Today, we're going to be talking, getting down and dirty. Well, I guess maybe up and dirty, around and dirty. How does it go?
Just dirty.
Yeah, we're getting out there. We're going to outer space because you, I told you last week, you are the center of the universe, at least according to some people. Here to talk with us today about whether or not we really are the center of the universe, none other than the bad astronomer, Phil Plait himself. He is a doctorate-holding astronomer. He's worked on the Hubble Space Telescope. He has a new show piloted on the Discovery Channel called Bad Astronomy. And welcome, Phil.
I'm on. Hi.
You are.
Thanks.
You can talk now.
Okay. There was no chance I was talking too much before the show actually started. Okay. Hey.
Thanks for joining me today. There's been some really... Last week, I guess it was, there was a website that popped up. First, I heard about it from a tweet by Tom Merritt, or it was like a Facebook post, and then somebody else tweeted me, and there's a conference, it seems, on geocentrism. And this topic, I don't know, every year or so, there's a little period, a little window of time where it just seems to pop up. And all of a sudden, people start talking about geocentrism, the idea that everything revolves around the Earth, that the Earth is the center of everything. And there are people who still really believe this and promote this view, hence the conference. There are papers still published. Phil, what's the state of stuff? I mean, isn't really big. I mean, this is one of those things that you learn in you know, basic science studies, that we go around the sun. There are other planets like the Earth that go around the sun.
Yeah, this stuff comes up about once a year, which is about the length of time it takes the sun to go around the Earth. So that's why they do that. Yeah, you know, geocentrism kind of went out of style at the time of Copernicus, but there you go. You know, it's still around. It's just like the flat earth people. It's just like creationists who think the earth is either 6,000 years old or was created last Thursday, something like that. It never really goes out of style. It's like denim. So, it was a kind of amazing to me. I see it around sometimes, and I've actually butted heads with a couple of these guys, in the past. It's not that big of a deal because they're really fairly marginalized. But then out of nowhere, there came this conference that was advertised on the web. And I heard about it, I don't remember how exactly. And I was sitting there thinking, I should really write something up. I've been meaning to write up something about geocentrism for a long time. And I figured, here's a great opportunity. So I wrote up a rebuttal to this, which is, you know, honestly, a little embarrassing. You know, I shouldn't have to write up a rebuttal to geocentrism. Okay, now, look, right? These are folks who really think that the universe revolves around the Earth, that, you know, here's the Earth, and the universe is going around. The sun goes around the Earth, and maybe, you know, some of them think that the planets go around the sun except for the Earth. So you've got the Earth here and the sun here, and all the planets are going around the sun, and the sun's going around the Earth, and the stars are spinning around the Earth once a day. And I remember thinking to myself, fine, right? It really, the main argument people give when they say, oh, that's ridiculous, because if you do the math, Neptune is far enough away that if you calculate how fast it would have to go to make a circle around the Earth in one day. It turns out it's roughly the speed of light. So anything beyond Neptune will have to be traveling faster than light to actually spin around us. And that sounds like a good argument.
Except for the laws of physics.
Yeah, yeah. This is the problem.
I mean, that's,
right?
That's a sticking point.
It's the thing is, if you do the math, I mean, that's kind of Newtonian thinking, that you just sit there and convert your frame of reference to something around the Earth and have everything go around. But if you actually do this using full-blown general relativity, changing your frame of reference, doing all the non-inertial frame stuff, the math has to work. The point of relativity is that there is no special frame. There are inertial and non-inertial frames, which means that there are frames that are not accelerating and frames that are. And when you spin something, it's accelerating. But, you know, don't worry about the detailed math. The point is the math has to work out. So, in fact, mathematically, you can have stuff going around the Earth faster than light. That doesn't actually violate the rules of relativity in this specific case. So you can't really use that argument. The argument here really is that these guys are saying this is the way things are. And I'm saying no. You know, geocentrism is a fine frame of reference. We use it all the time. I don't actually wake up in the morning and say, wow, the spin of the Earth from west to east has, relative to my local horizon, brought the sun up above the eastern horizon such that it can now shine on me. I don't say that. I say, the sun rose today, right? You choose your reference to make things easy. And so for a lot of things that we do, including a lot of astronomy, geocentrism is a great frame because it doesn't feel like the Earth is moving. However, as soon as you want to launch a rocket to Mars, that becomes a very, very difficult frame to use. It's much easier to use a heliocentric frame. Saying that, that's not always the best frame either. If I'm trying to figure out where something is in the galaxy, using the center of the galaxy makes more sense. Or if I'm using the
We just lost you for a second.
That's great, because I lost what I was talking about. I was like totally fried there. Am I back?
You're back, yes.
Hello? So the point is, actually, I think you just threw that in there to shut me up. But the point is, you take your money, you pay your frame of reference. You pick the one that works the best. And there isn't any one true frame, but these guys are arguing from a literal biblical viewpoint, and they say that the Earth is the center of the universe, and that to me is wrong. That's silly, and you can't really claim that. So that's what I say on my webpage.
Yeah, and I think it's from the frame of reference, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work for anything that we're trying to do. Here's the website for the conference that.
There you go.
It's Galileo Was Wrong. If you look for that, GalileoWasWrong.com. This is a CatholicInternational.com. So this is actually a Catholic conference on geocentrism. So it's interesting that it's a portion of the Catholic Church that is into this idea that Galileo is wrong. I mean, you know, Copernicus would have to be wrong. The church was right. The titling of this conference is rather, controversial and a little insightful to riot.
Oh, I don't know if it's controversial. Controversial means there are two sides of an argument that people are arguing about.
Yeah.
They're just dead wrong. Galileo was not wrong. Copernicus was not wrong. They are wrong in claiming there's only one frame, and that is geocentrism. That is clearly wrong. Geocentrism with a little g is like I said, is fine. Astronomers use it because we see the rising and setting of the stars, and we use it for our telescopes. Them claiming there's only one frame is clearly wrong. Now, and if you go online and look for geocentrist websites, you will actually find people claiming that the stars are affixed to crystal spheres. And that is clearly wrong because, you know, there's this whole space probes going out of the solar system thing, and they would kind of crash into those spheres. I don't really see that happening. Plus, we know that the stars move. I've actually, it's not just the rising and setting of the stars.
Not to mention that, we also have supernovas. We have gamma ray bursts.
Things change.
We see things change.
the stars move relative to each other as they're orbiting the center of the galaxy. It's like bees around a beehive. And so you can see that motion. It's very slow. But I know that you have to account for it when you're taking Hubble observations. Some nearby stars have moved so much in the past, you know, 30 or 40 years since their coordinates were measured and put down into a catalog. You have to account for that motion. They've moved so much that if you point Hubble at where they used to be, they're not there anymore. You would actually miss your target. I've seen that happen. So, in fact, the stars are not affixed to crystal spheres. I think we have pretty good proof of that. Plus, common sense, you know. It's mm-hmm. Every now and again, it's good to have a little bit of that.
Yeah. I have to wonder, though, you know, the Vatican itself has astronomers, official astronomers, and, you know, for the most part, it very pro-science, and they're, you know, they publish research papers, and I just have to wonder if the Vatican researchers are heading to this conference.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that this was it's the Catholic Church that these guys are claiming, because typically creationists are not Catholics. And in fact, now I can't say anything about Benedict, the Pope now. I could say lots of things about him, and I did actually on my blog yesterday. But in fact, the last Pope, John Paul II, was totally into the science. And although some of his social claims I don't agree with, what he did say about science, you know, there was room for evolution, there was room for the Big Bang in his cosmology. So, that I think that's great. Benedict Ratzinger now, I think, doesn't feel the same way that John Paul II did. And that's leading to some interesting butting of heads going on right now. And it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few years.
Yeah. I have to wonder also the people that are promoting the idea of geocentrism, who keep, you know, doing research in the area, who are going to this conference, how do ideas like this keep perpetuating? Flat Earth, geocentrism. These are, if you look at physics, if you study physics, the evidence is there, and you can keep pointing to more and more and more evidence, and it's just ignored.
Yeah, it's because they're not coming from a direction where they're saying, let's look at the evidence and figure out what's going on. They're saying the Bible is literally true. And if we see something that is contradicting the Bible, we must be wrong. And that's just not a good way to do science. It's certainly not a good way to try to figure out what's going on in the universe. And I have to say, I'm not a theologian, but I have read the Bible actually several times. I've read the Sermon on the Mount, which I love. It's a great sermon.
Yeah.
And, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth and turn the other cheek. These are all loving, humble pieces of advice from Jesus. And to think that the universe spins around the earth, that everything, that the earth is, you know, the center of the universe itself, strikes me as being a little bit arrogant. So I have a hard time understanding what's going on in the heads of these folks as well.
In terms of going past just geocentrism, but you mentioned stuff like the space probes leaving our solar system. What's to explain their slowing down? Are they coming up against some buffer layer on the crystal ball?
Yeah, that's it. It's an anti-gravity device on the crystal spheres to keep us stranded on Earth.
Yes.
I wasn't supposed to say that. Oh, there goes my paycheck from NASA.
Yeah.
Actually, what's interesting is that idea, this is called the Pioneer Anomaly. It's been known for many years, actually. I'm not even sure how long it's been known. At least 10 years, I would say. And the Voyager probes, I believe, are undergoing this as well. And that is, when you account for all of the effects of gravity in the solar system, all the planets, the sun, everything else, these probes are not decelerating at the rate you would expect, right? They're outside Neptune's orbit. So basically, all the mass of the solar system is behind them. So they should be slowing down at a rate that we can calculate. And it turns out that they're not. Their deceleration is off by a tiny little bit. And so it's called the Pioneer Anomaly. And every now and again, I see this pops up. I just saw this again on Reddit and a couple of other blog aggregators, news aggregators. And I think that's funny because I think we understand where most of this is coming from. A friend of mine, Ed Murphy, who is an astronomer at University of Virginia, actually, I think, was the first guy to try to model this as the probe being heated by the sun, right? It's very far out from the sun, but it's still being warmed a little bit by sunlight. So it absorbs light from the sun and then re-emits that light as infrared. It's warm light. And that adds a little bit of momentum to the spacecraft. It's really tiny, but it turns out that if you model the shape of the spacecraft and how it absorbs light and how it emits it again, you start to get an acceleration that is within the ballpark of what we're seeing here. So I think that that's going to be when they model this thing in detail, which they haven't done yet because it's really hard to do. The physics is complicated. I think that when they do it in detail, you're going to find that almost all, if not all of this mysterious force is actually just that. I don't think we have to invoke any sort of bizarre anti-gravity or anything like that. I think it's just a known thing that is just really hard to model accurately. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. I'm thinking of known versus unknown. There are things that people like to talk about that the dark planet X, Nibiru, these are other things that are related to our solar system that, you know, real or not real?
Not real. Next. Oh.
Please explain.
One of these days, I'm going to do an interview, and they're going to say, what kind of research did you used to do? And I'll be able to talk about real astronomy instead of made-up baloney astronomy.
Yeah.
not that didn't I did we, that much research.
Didn't we,
and not
didn't
that
we do that,
that
the last time you were on? We talked about your Hubble research.
Oh, that's
We've
true.
Done
I
it.
I had that Hubble model with your picture on it. I've actually got that someplace. I don't know. It's in a box somewhere in my office. So you're asking about Planet X. There are people out there who think that there might be some giant planet orbiting the sun on some sort of multi-millennia orbit, and it's on a highly elliptical orbit that every, 3,000 years, something like that, brings it back into the sun and then back out again, and its gravity plays havoc with all the planets. And the thing is, we know, rock solid, bet your entire life that we know this thing doesn't exist. It cannot exist. Because if there were any massive object, by massive, I mean more massive than like our moon, that were on this kind of orbit that brought it into the inner solar system, closer than the Earth orbits the sun, the orbits of the planets would reflect that. A 3,000-year orbit, 3,500, whatever they're claiming, is tiny, tiny, tiny compared to the age of the solar system. And the Earth has been orbiting the sun for billions of years. And we do know that the planet's gravity affects each other. So you can account for that when you're making models of where the planet should be. And if there were a planet out there massive enough to do the things that these people are claiming, the orbits of the inner planets would be totally screwed up. And we just don't see that. Venus's orbit is incredibly circular, in fact. If it were being affected by some planet like this, all the planets would be on incredibly elliptical orbits. So this is silly. And all of this goes back to Velikovsky, of all people, who in the 1950s wrote these books, Worlds in Collision. And what he was trying to do was trying to match biblical events to real things going on Earth. So when manna fell from heaven, when there were the plagues during Exodus and all of that, he was trying to match this up with astronomical events. And he was claiming that Venus literally was ejected from Jupiter to match up with the birth of Minerva from Zeus in the Greek mythology, and orbited the sun and passed by the Earth, and there was an exchange of atmosphere between Venus and the Earth, and that's why manna fell from heaven. Kind of confused carbohydrates, which is, bread, starch, with hydrocarbons like oil. We've seen hydrocarbons in Venus's atmosphere. Not carbohydrates.
Kind of different.
But he was making all these claims, and these were ridiculous claims right off the bat. I mean, Carl Sagan debated Velikovsky in the 1970s, I think it was. But Velikovsky's claims are patently ridiculous. But he kind of faded away, and then other people picked it up, like this guy Zachariah Sitchin, and then Nancy Leader, who claimed she was communicating with aliens from another planet, who were telling her about this 10th planet called Nibiru that would come by the Earth and destroy us. Oh, by the way, May 15th, 2003. Okay.
Yeah, so, point made.
I'm hoping you're all following me on this. Yeah.
I wonder why it's late. I mean, maybe it's just, you know, going to show up next week.
Oh, like you know that. How those crazy planets are. Just want to make a dramatic entrance because, yeah. You know, wiping out 90% of life on Earth isn't dramatic enough.
Right.
Isn't there a chance we just haven't seen it? I mean, that there's something hanging out there and it's just not seen.
Nope.
A dark planet.
Nope.
Am I not making myself clear?
No. Okay. So look, this claim gets reanimated like a zombie every few years. It started with Velikovsky, reanimated by Sitchin, picked up by Nancy Leader. She went away 7 years ago, and now it's back with these 2012 people saying the Mayan prophecy says this planet's going to come by. Look. If you go outside tonight, if it's dark where you are right now, and it's like 7:30 on the East Coast, so it's actually maybe getting dark there. But if you wait until tonight, go outside, wait until like 10 o'clock local time. Go outside, look to the east. You're going to see this bright planet there, this bright star. That's Jupiter, okay? Jupiter is roughly 350 million miles away, something like that. It's hundreds of millions of miles away from the Earth. Yep. It is one of the brightest objects in the night sky right now, okay? Any planet that were even, you know, five times farther away than Jupiter would be shining like that, so obvious you could not miss it. There is no way any planet, even smaller than Jupiter, could be out there that we would not have seen by now because it would be really obvious and really bright. However, I will say we are discovering objects way out in the solar system that are actually bigger than Pluto. And there could be planets as big as the Earth way out in the solar system. Huh. But again, if they were on these orbits that brought them into the sun, we'd have discovered them a long time ago and because their footprint would be all over our orbits. These things do not exist the way these people are claiming, period.
Yeah. Do the comets that come through, I mean, they're not... that come through, like Halley's Comet or the Hale-Bopp Comet, like things that come through periodically, do they have, I mean, they're smaller usually with respect to our planet,
right.
But do they affect, they'd probably have a minimal effect on orbits, or do they not really?
You'd have a really hard time seeing the effect of an object like a comet on a planet, because comets are tiny. Hale-Bopp swung by in the late 1990s. This was an object that was basically a chunk of rock and ice about, I want to say, 30 miles across. I think that's about the size of it. That's actually really big when you think that the comet or the asteroid that hit the Earth 65 million years ago and wiped out the dinosaurs was probably 6 miles across. So this thing is actually something like 100 times the mass of what hit and wiped out the dinosaurs. If something like Hale-Bopp hit us, it'd be lights out for all life
not
on Earth.
So happy.
And that's a big nucleus for a comet. Even that would have a minimal effect. It'd have to swing really close to the Earth to have any effect on us. And even then, I'm not sure it's measurable. I'd have to do the math. It could move the Earth a few miles out of its orbit, but that's, you know, even a few miles is really hard to detect, in fact. But even then, and I may be hugely exaggerating, and I'm kind of talking out of my hat here, chances are when you're talking about an object like the Earth, which is 8,000 miles across, and an object which is, you know, 30 miles across, not a big deal. You're just not going to see it. They're beautiful and bright. And in fact, there's a comet, Comet Hartley, I believe is the name of it, that may become naked eye visible in the next month. And by naked eye visible, I mean fifth magnitude. You'll need probably binoculars unless you live in a really dark site. But keep your eyes open for information about that on the web. I'm sure I'll be writing about it when I hear more. But that actually may be a pretty comet to see through binoculars.
Yeah. What about the darker objects, so asteroids that come through? I mean, we're still looking at, you know, we're finding asteroids all the time. They don't reflect light. They don't in the same way. Sometimes they're really hard to see. Have we found most of the big ones, or do you think there's still, you know, the big one lurking out there?
NASA is actually tasked to see to try to map out every asteroid above a certain size in the next few years. And by a certain size, I mean bigger than about a football stadium. And these are the ones that can approach the Earth. So there are these asteroids between Mars and Jupiter's orbit. So these guys, pretty much stay a couple hundred million miles away from the Earth. The problem is not all of them do that. There are thousands and thousands of asteroids whose orbits actually cross that of the Earth. And that's a problem because over time, eventually, they could hit us. Anything bigger than about 150 meters is about the right size to start being able to wipe out a city. And you don't want that. And I mean by wipe out a city, I mean wipe out a city. If you've ever gone to Arizona and you go see Meteor Crater, there's a crater there. It's about a mile wide. That was probably from a chunk of iron that was probably not a whole lot bigger than a house, something 30 yards across, 40 yards across. And yet it did. It blew up with the yield of a 30 megaton bomb, 20 megaton bomb, something like that. So you really don't want these things getting anywhere near us. And NASA's supposed to see them all. And it turns out that's not easy. Some of them are in orbits that makes them hard to find. Some of them are very dark and they're hard to find. I don't want to scare anybody, but honestly, you know, an object that's 50 yards across, probably we wouldn't see it before it hit us. We might get lucky. If it's in the part of the sky that we happen to be looking, we might see it. A couple of years ago, an object something like 2 meters across. I'm sorry, I've lost my connection with the Matrix here. Here we go. I'm sorry, Agent Smith. Okay. This object was a couple of meters across, something like that, was actually seen less than a day before it hit us, and it blew up over Africa. And so that was interesting, the first time we've ever seen one before it hit. But it blew up miles up in the atmosphere. It wasn't a big deal. But something bigger than that could do damage. And there are a lot of people out there taking this seriously. And so we're looking for these things, but we need more funding. We need more telescopes looking at the sky. The first step in this is seeing these dang things, and then we can start talking about what to do about them.
Yeah. Do you think amateur astronomers are going to play a big role in finding these asteroids and objects that we haven't seen?
That used to be true, that amateurs found most of these comets and asteroids. And that was true until really recently. I mean, if you watch Armageddon, and I wouldn't recommend it, or you watch Deep Impact, which I would recommend, in both of those movies, the object was discovered by an amateur. In Armageddon, he had some huge observatory. In Deep Impact, it was Frodo, whatever his name is, the kid who plays Frodo. Well, it was the same actor.
Okay, got it.
He discovered a comet. That used to be true even in 1998. The thing is now we have automatic telescopes. You don't need big ones. Matter of fact, small ones are good for this. They can see big chunks of the sky, and they could be automated. Are advanced to look, the computers themselves can be programmed to look at the data and look for things that move and alert astronomers if there's anything in there. So nowadays, most of these things are found by robotic telescopes. And in fact, NASA has an infrared orbiting telescope called WISE, which has actually seen thousands of asteroids. And I don't know the statistics of how many of them were previously undiscovered, but it's quite a few. And those are basically, those are doing the lion's share of the work now.
Yeah, I just, from the discoveries this summer of the asteroid impacts on Jupiter, is that the right?
Yeah,
on Jupiter.
Cool.
Those were found by amateurs. And I'm just wondering, you know, if there's a lot within our solar system that, because, I mean, we have WISE and we have these other robotic telescope systems, but, you know, a lot of the systems that we have in place are looking really far out. They're looking at distances that are, you know, the close-up stuff, not in focus. The faraway stuff,
that's what you're looking for. Exactly. You know, anything farther than a couple hundred miles away is going to be in focus, I think. But, you know, they're looking at big parts of the sky. And actually, the ground-based observatories and even WISE is orbiting the Earth. When they look out in the sky, they'll see things that are close by and far away. But the farther away they are, the dimmer they are, and the harder it is to see them, unless they happen to be, you know, icy and reflective. But something dark, and most comet nuclei, for example, are extremely dark. It's only because they warm up and blast out water ice and things like that they become reflective. They reflect sunlight, and you can see them. In the case of these objects that hit Jupiter, this is actually a really cool story. We had never seen an object unequivocally. We've never, you know, absolutely seen another object in the solar system get hit until 1994, when Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 hit Jupiter. And that was a comet discovered in a ground-based telescope and then subsequently observed with like every frickin' telescope on the planet when it hit Jupiter in 1994, including Hubble, telescopes above the Earth as well. Then we didn't see anything. until last year, an amateur astronomer in Australia, I think it was Australia, and I may be confusing a couple of these impacts, but it was an amateur astronomer who saw this blip that on his video that he took of Jupiter and said, hey, I think I may have seen an impact. And there was a black spot on, or maybe he was seeing, and again, I may be confusing these, I'd have to look it up. But there was a little black spot on Jupiter. And the thing is, we see these black spots sometimes. Sometimes they're just storms on Jupiter, at least we think. We're not sure.
Right.
And then they followed up with an infrared telescope, and boom, you could see this spot that looked just like the Shoemaker-Levy impact. And it's like, yeah, this guy saw something hit Jupiter. And it happened again this year in 2010, earlier, another impact on Jupiter was seen. So now we're thinking Jupiter gets hit all the fracking time. But it's just hard to spot these things. These flashes of light last for literally a couple of seconds, and then they're gone. And a lot of them don't leave a trace. They're not big enough, or they don't explode the right way. And you look at Jupiter, and it's just swallowed up and gone. So the only way to see, I mean, Jupiter's a big freaking planet. So the only way to see these things is to constantly observe it. And that's how these astronomers are spotting them, these amateur astronomers. They're taking video. They go back later and spot it on the video and go, oh, my gosh. And then, you know, somebody tries to follow up and see if there's anything there. But a lot of these have been confirmed by other amateur astronomers observing at the same time. It's the only way to know for sure.
Right. The multiple observations. I think all of this also goes into the idea. I mean, for as long as I can remember, people have been saying, well, the reason that life has been able to evolve here on Earth and that we have the conditions that we do is thanks to these big gas giants that are in the outer solar system that are blocking all of these asteroid impacts. And so, or comet impacts even. And so if they're attracting all of the objects, we get hit much less often. And we have a happier place to live. So we see that happen more and more often. It'll be verification of these kinds of ideas.
Right. The big planets, like, well, mostly Jupiter, but Saturn as well, they act in two ways. We get it's a twofer here. One is that they have such high gravity that they can draw in these objects and suck them down before they could hit us. But also, if one of these things passes near Jupiter, Jupiter's gravity can give it a big kick and fling it out of the solar system. So it acts like a not so much a vacuum cleaner as a slingshot, and it removes these objects from hitting us over billions of years. So that's pretty cool. It's kind of nice to have that there, but it's not 100% effective, and there are still things out there that pose a threat.
Yeah, what's you on your the pilot of your show, Bad Astronomy?
Bad Universe. Website's Bad Astronomy. Yeah, I know.
Bad Universe. Asteroids, comet impact, that was one of the topics of your shows. You did you tried to reenact things in the laboratory, you blew things up. I mean, what was the take home from the show? We're all gonna die? I don't know.
Yes. Sadly. Sorry guys. And I should say it's Phil Plait's Bad Universe.
Yes,
that actually wasn't my idea. That was my director's idea, and Discovery Channel ran with it. Bad Universe is actually a three-part miniseries, you can call it that, that's airing on Discovery Channel. The first one aired on August 29th. I have to do this. The next one is on
October 6th.
Glug, 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 ding, ding, ding. Do you have a bell you can ring like you're supposed to on radio shows? Like
I wish I had one.
I have something. I've got a Coke can here, maybe.
No.
Yeah, that's probably good enough.
Ding, yeah, ding, right. Ding, 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 ding.
So October 6th, which is a Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern time, check your local listings. The second episode of Bad Universe will air, and it's after Mythbusters. I'm actually really thrilled when my director called and my producer called and said, "Yeah, we're going to put you on after Mythbusters. Is that okay? Their season premiere."
Yeah, that's good.
I can handle that.
Yeah.
So it's their season premiere. It's going to be a good episode. The first one that we aired was about asteroid impacts, and we actually tested different ways of keeping them from hitting us. And what we found, and we kind of knew this in advance, but we actually showed it pretty well, I think, is that if you see an asteroid headed your way, what you want to do is slam a spacecraft into it. It's the easiest thing to do. We know how to do it. We've done it before. We tested it on a comet. You basically just, you know, you take your space probe and wham, you hit the asteroid. It's like a linebacker hitting a quarterback, knocking him back. I think I have that right. I'm a science geek, not sports aficionado. Sigler, if you're listening, you know, call in and correct me. Scott Sigler was on this show, so maybe he is listening. He's a big sports guy. So you hit the asteroid, and you actually change its momentum. changing its momentum means you change its speed, change its orbit. And if you do this early on enough, it'll miss. It's just like a car on a highway. If you're standing in the middle of the highway and the car slows down just a little bit, it gives you enough time to walk away as long as the car is far enough away and you avoid that impact. The same with an asteroid. And then what you can do is later, after you do this, you check the orbit, make sure it's safe. If it's not, if it's still maybe in 100 years going to hit you or something like that, then you, there are other things you can do to very slowly change the orbit of that asteroid. But, you know, I won't go into details, but the point is, because you can watch the show if they re-air it, it'll be on Discovery Canada, I think, October 3rd. Look it up on my blog. I got all the information there. I can't keep track of all this stuff. The point is, we have an understanding of how to build this technology to do this. It's not really off-the-shelf technology. A lot of it is. Most of it is. So it is possible that we can get most of the way towards preventing an asteroid impact. And we really don't want to test this for the first time on something headed our way. We really need to do this on some other asteroid that's in a safe orbit already so that we know that we can't really hurt it. And send it our way and test this technology so that one day when we see one with our number on it, you know, we know we can do something about it.
Yeah. What do you think about nuclear weapons as opposed to just, I mean, it'd be pretty easy just to push it, you know, to have that impact that would of a space vehicle that you mentioned, you know, just knocking into it like a quarterback. But right. What about nuclear weapons have been tossed around a lot. Is that an option?
Nuclear weapons are, you know, it's
nuclear
the first thing
vessels.
You think of. Yeah, right. Nuke it. You know, send Chekhov and Bruce Willis to go up there. And it seems like the right thing to do, but it turns out it's really hard for a couple of reasons. One is that if you're going to try to bomb this thing, you want to put the bomb a certain, either want to hit it with the bomb and detonate the bomb, which means like nanosecond timing. I mean, these things are approaching each other at speeds of like 30 to 50 miles per second. So, you know, you have to detonate that bomb with sub-millisecond timing or else it's just going to slam into the asteroid and be destroyed. And then you've got a kinetic impactor anyway. And you didn't have to lob a nuke at it. You could have just lobbed a space probe at it. So you don't need the nuke in the first place. Or you have to get the nuke on a trajectory that matches the asteroid. And you're talking about accelerating this thing to many, many, many miles per second, which is hard. And then we detonate these things. We don't know exactly what it's going to do. It depends on what kind of material the asteroid's made of. If it's made of rock, if it's got ice in it like a comet nucleus, or if it's metal, you get a different effect. And it turns out it's hard to do this. It makes a lot more sense. It's a lot cheaper and safer and easier to just simply hit this thing as hard as you can with a space probe and then push it into a different orbit. It's just the right thing to do.
I think that's a good t-shirt. It's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's good.
Is Zach Wiener out there? Is he in the chat room? From Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. This has got to be a good cartoon strip.
It would be. It would be a good cartoon strip. I think that's good.
Shirts. Here, I'll give a shout out to him. The Most Dangerous Game t-shirt.
Nice. Oh, wait.
I love Saturday
Show it
Morning
again.
Breakfast.
Show it again. I was looking at the wrong screen. Show it again.
There we go. See, it's the Most Dangerous Game. Can you see that? Yeah, above that.
Scary.
Let's see. So I should check Twitter and see if he comes up with something. Because if he's not watching, and I know there are, I see people in the chat room. I know there are a few skeptics out there. I see.
There are a few skeptics out there. I see them in the chat room.
Tree lobsters.
Yeah. People are confirming as well your local listings for Canada, October 3rd.
Okay. It's and the October. Asia in November. I know that as well.
Right. And it's also been confirmed that your first episode is on the Pirate Bay already. Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. And people are asking me, is it okay if we download it illegally? Hello? You know, if it were a TV show and like Mythbusters or whatever, and it was a series and everything like that, I wouldn't have any opinion on it. But since it's a pilot and we're trying to get it made into a series and trying to convince the network to buy it up as a series, the more people who watch it on screen, on their TV, the better. Now, on the other hand, if you don't have cable, if you're not going to watch it anyway because you don't have a TV or whatever, who am I to say? But I think
Here's the thing.
Go get cable.
Here's the thing. Why don't people have Bad Universe watching parties. You can watch MythBusters and Bad Universe have a party, and everybody's
watching. Because you're assuming the people watching this have friends with TVs, and that makes the assumption they have friends, and they're just not living alone in a basement someplace.
Too much of an assumption. Yeah.
But honestly, that's a great idea.
The point is, you need people seeing the show. We want good, fun presentations of real science to get on the air. And the way that's going to happen is if people support this pilot. So,
well, thank you. And I'm kind of hoping that Discovery is trying to get more science on the air. And they have really good shows. I love Dirty Jobs and those shows. They're reality programming, but they're not reality programming. But, you know, they're just not science-based. And so it would be great to see a lot more science programming on TV. And I'm kind of hoping, you know, that they'll pick this one to do it. We have plenty of ideas if they pick it up. It's not like there's a limit to the ways the universe can screw us up.
There's no limit.
And I can do other science things. So we'll see how that goes. But it was a lot of fun filming the show, and I'd love to keep doing it. A party would be a good idea, or you could buy a television and get cable, you cheapskates. Get out there and do it for science.
Do it for science, people.
And I probably shouldn't insult the audience and say that they're all loners living in basements. But, you know, there you go. Too late.
Too late. We've already done it.
Look around here. I'm in my office at home. I'm wearing, you know, I may or may not be wearing pants. So,
but we don't know. You showed us your shirt, and that's as far as it went.
I went outside today to play with the dog and to check for the mail.
You're probably wearing pants. Maybe.
I would say it's 50-50. Either wearing pants or not.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking Discovery is great. The getting on Discovery is fantastic because it's you know, it's a basic cable channel, and people who a lot of people still have cable. It's a basic cable channel, so you get cable, it comes with Discovery. The Science Channel, which I love, you know, I've been on a show on the Science Channel and love the Science Channel. However, it's a premium channel, so not as many people are going to see it. So if you want science that's going to reach more people, get things like Nibiru, the dark planet, you know, conversations about comets and asteroids and
2012.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Whenever I give talks to kids, I'm always getting, you know, what about this 2012 stuff? What do I hear about this? And it's like, yeah, it's all baloney, but it would be very easy. Because if you go to some other channels on basic cable, they may be running shows talking about Nostradamus predicting that Hitler's ghost would appear in a UFO in 2012. And they run shows like that all the time. And it's just, you know, head bang against the wall time when those things are on. So I'd love to see shows on, you know, and there's a big flurry of paranormal shows going on right now with ghost hunting and that
Absolutely.
Sort of stuff. I would love to see any show on that is that's debunking that. But if I had to, I'll take a bullet for this one. I'll make the TV show. I'll be on TV and take care of it for me. So somebody else doesn't have to. Okay.
Right. Are you friends with Michio? Are you friends with Michio Kaku? Are you in a competition? Should we be taking sides?
Well, if it's a hair competition, I think I've got him beat. No, actually, I don't know him. He's one of the few, you know, there's not a whole lot of people who do science presenting on TV or just, you know, doing this kind of outreach. We could use a lot more people. The more the merrier. But, you know, I've known Neil Tyson for many years. I've only met Bill Nye once. He wouldn't have any clue who I am. I bumped to him at a meeting once. He taught me how to shoot a rubber band farther and straighter. It's very useful in the office.
Very useful.
Back when I had a real job and I used to shoot my coworkers from like 20 feet away, they lived in fear of my deadly accuracy. It was cool. I'd always tell them, courtesy of Bill Nye, boing, hit him in the butt with a rubber band. I've just never crossed paths with him. So it's kind of funny. I assume eventually I will, but it just hasn't happened yet.
I think that we should try and make science presenters. Everyone gets to be friends. We don't have to. Although people like competition, so maybe a little friendly competition between science presenters. You know, I don't know.
Well, you and I met for the first time.
Oh, right.
I believe on the set of Skeptologists.
That's true.
Which was the pilot we worked on, and so there you go. I mean, there's room for plenty of shows like that on TV. I think they'd be pretty successful.
There's room for plenty. So I've got you on here. We're doing live streaming video right now.
True.
2012. What do you tell people?
I tell people it's a really, really crappy movie. and this is coming from me. I like Amanda Peet, and I like John Cusack, and that was a crappy movie. There is
censored.
Not any... yeah.
Exactly.
There is nothing I have seen about 2012 on the web or on these radio shows or anything or on TV that has been accurate. Anybody claiming disaster in 2012 is full of it. It's just that clear. These claims that the Mayan calendar ends in 2012 is wrong, and that are wrong. I said claims, didn't I? So it's plural. Are wrong. There's nothing to that. It's a total misinterpretation of the Mayan calendar from top to bottom. There's nothing about solar flares that's going to kill everybody on Earth in 2012. It's almost literally impossible for the sun to have such a massive solar storm that it could wipe out life on Earth. It could hurt us. A big solar storm could hurt us. And in fact, there may or may not be an episode of my show coming up about that. They can damage our satellites and do things like that. Hint, hint. But there's nothing like that. And in fact, the solar storms that are coming up, the sun's cycle is starting to peak. It won't peak until 2013, well after 2012. There are claims that... the sun is going. Oh, wow. We have a visitor behind me. There
Hello,
we go.
Hello, cat.
Astro cat.
You have a cat growing out of your shoulder.
Apparently, this is what happens when you work from home, folks. Any minute I'm waiting for my dogs to start going ballistic and start barking. Canis Major and Canis Minor, which are not their real names. But that's not their real names. When you talk about a family member on the blog, you have to give them a pseudonym. So this is Leo. This is Leo. Not her real name. And Canis Major and Canis Minor. There are these other people claiming that the sun is going to align with the galactic center in 2012. And either that's going to cause some sort of enlightenment or beams from the supermassive black hole, which will kill us or something. That's
right.
All... How PG-13 is this? It's all crap. It's really crap. The sun does line up kind of, sort of, with the center of the galaxy every December. It happens every year. As the Earth goes around the sun, we see the sun apparently moving across the sky. There's that geocentrism again for you. And it moves from constellation to constellation. That's where we get the zodiac constellations from, Cancer and Leo and Virgo and all that. We're living in a galaxy which is a flat disk. Wait a second.
Do you have... And he has visual aids, people. He will be...
I can't hear you. I've left the camera. Here, look. It's my Milky Way galaxy of science. I've actually taped some CDs together. And so we live in this spiral galaxy. And see, I've even got a picture of it there.
You have a picture of the spiral arms of the Milky Way. What's in the center there?
A red rubber ball, which represents the older red stars in the center of our galaxy. I got the color right because I'm an astronomer.
Yeah. Do you think it's the older red stars? What do you think, a big giant black hole in the center of our galaxy?
There is a supermassive black hole in the center of our galaxy. It's about 4 million times the mass of the sun, which sounds like, you know, oh my God, 4 million times the mass of the sun. But when you realize the entire galaxy has 400 billion times the mass of the sun, that 4 million becomes a drop in the bucket. It's 100,000th of the entire galaxy's mass. So it's a tiny, you could remove that black hole and the galaxy would move happily on in the way it is. So since we live in this galaxy, we see it edge on. And as the Earth goes around the sun, we see the constellation sort of overlaid on this line of the galaxy. And Sagittarius is where the direction of the center of the galaxy is. So when you go up, actually, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, it's even better. Right now, tonight, although the moon is just a day past full, but if you wait a couple of days when the moon is not up and you look to the south, you'll see the constellation of Sagittarius. And if you have dark skies, you'll see the Milky Way running right through it. And that bulge, this bulge of stars, you can actually see that in Sagittarius. And that's where the center of the galaxy is. And every December, the sun passes right through there. You know, and I keep thinking every December, the Earth isn't destroyed, okay? So I know we can live through this. And in fact, because of all these other physical processes going on, the closest the sun ever came to apparently moving across the center of the galaxy was in 1998. 12 years ago, okay? So if we were going to be destroyed, it would have been in 98, which would have been great because that's when Armageddon came out and it would have saved me a lot of trouble.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that was a lot of fun back then. Talking.
So there. So yeah, I rant a lot about this kind of stuff.
It's good. Ranting is good, but it's also good to, you know, actually have logic behind it and be able to answer the questions that people have, and you know, be able to come back and say, okay, this is what's happening in our universe. 2012. This is why it's not happening. This is, you know, be able to say, this is why the sun can't, you know, blow up our planet or.
And these guys who are making these claims, they have an advantage in that what they're selling is sexy. Doomsday is sexy, right? And people also tend to believe for an authority. If you couch something in even vaguely scientific terms, these people are going to buy into it. So they have an unfair advantage. However, we have an unfair advantage in that we're correct and we have evidence and we can show you that evidence. And it's like, you know, here's why this doesn't happen. The problem is getting the word out, because these guys have a huge advantage. You know, they are not making huge movies with John Cusack and how the Earth is not destroyed in 2012. Of course, I guess every movie except for that one is showing the Earth not being destroyed in 2012. But that's not sort of the thrust of the movie. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Rant on the internet.
Rant on. That should be like a superpower.
I'm angry man, like what was it, Mystery Men and Ben Stiller.
Exactly.
Furious guy, furious man. Mr. Furious.
That's me. There's a Amoeba Mike on Twitter. He has a blog site, and he's making science trading cards for people and has wonderful questions, like wonderful pieces of information about people, like what's your nemesis? I want to know what your nemesis is, Phil.
Is that Amoeba Mike? Because I know Len Peralta, who is Jawbone Radio, has been doing the Geek a Week.
Oh, I don't
trading
know.
Cards.
Yeah, I think it's some Amoeba Mike, and there might be different ones with Len
Peralta. I wonder if they're doing different ones. Yeah, because Len does Geek a Week, and he's talked to Adam Savage and Kevin Smith mm-hmm. and Bria Grant and Veronica Belmont and me.
Ah.
So. Yeah, I was so flattered when he asked me, and he asked me what who my nemesis is, and if I were a superhero,
you are the bad astronomer. Isn't that a superhero enough? Like, exactly.
Yeah. Right. I already have nemesis. A lot of them have come and gone. Bart Sabrell, the moon hoax guy, the guy Buzz Aldrin punched, and you know, Richard Hoagland, and now all these not necessarily the 2012 people, because I haven't really written much about that. I probably will. I really need to, and have a sort of a one-stop shopping for 2012 nonsense. But you know, these people come and go. Nancy Leader with her Nibiru and all that stuff. The last thing I need is like a made-up nemesis. That's like I'm already kind of exhausted with the real life ones. So, you know, just keep hammering away at it.
And
the disadvantage of being a skeptic is that, you know, I'll never be out of a job.
Well, it's a good thing. It's not a disadvantage. It's, you know, something to look forward to. A lifelong pursuit of knowledge.
Tree Lobster says Jenny McCarthy. That's a good one, too. Yeah. Anti-vax.
Absolutely. Nonsense. And who I've been seeing recently, she has a comedy tour going out on. There are these signs that I've been seeing on buses. It's like comedy for the children or something. So she's got a comedy tour that's
sure up. People are whooping in the audience.
Whoop, whoop.
Because she's saying don't get vaccinated, and then
whooping
kids
cough.
Are getting whooping cough and dying. So it's actually not really funny.
Now the chat room right now is just filling up with
oh, they're
whoop,
whooping.
Whoop,
yeah, there
whoop.
We go. Actually, what are they saying? Are they saying terrible things about us? The bad astronomer sounds more like a villain. Mine is an evil laugh.
Yeah, the evil laugh for the bad astronomer. Yeah, you'd have to get a someone's asking, what's your karma score?
What, on Reddit? It's like 2,900.
No.
Oh, it's, I don't know.
Okay, so on your blog, the Discover Media blog, Bad Astronomy.
Yeah, isn't this great now? It's like, it's hard enough getting Discover Magazine when I say it correct. say it correctly. Now I've got Discovery Channel as well. So it's like Discover and Discover. If I had a Discover card, I don't know what the hell I'd do with my life. I'd be confused all the time. But anyway, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about your blog. You have the blog on the Discover website, discoverwebmagazine.com/badastronomy. What are you doing mostly there? Are you ranting about stuff?
Yeah.
But you know, the ranting is great. Are you looking forward to lots of astronomical events and like clarifying things for people, or is it just a lot of ranting?
It's mostly ranting. Oh, my cat's making noise now. You may hear her in the background. Yeah. She's complaining. Why aren't you talking about me?
Talk about Leo the cat.
Yeah. She smells bad. I scooped her litter today. TMI, waiting for the first TMI reference in the chat room there. The blog is mostly me writing about it's I don't know if it's mostly astronomy. At some point I'll have to do some archive digging and seeing some archaeology in it and see how much I write about astronomy. But I try to write about astronomy, if not once a day, at least every couple of days. But it's also things about skepticism. I just wrote about the Pope's visit in the UK. There you go. Look at that picture of us from Conference on World Affairs last year here in Boulder. Yeah. And, I was going to say, and just nerdery, look at that. That's the Enterprise pizza cutter that Think Geek is selling. Oh my
nice.
God, I want
it.
And
put on the want list.
Yeah, it's a little pricey. I'll tell my wife I want that for Christmas. Yeah, so there you go. I wrote about the Texas School Board again because they every few months when they realize that nobody's talking about them and people are instead talking about Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan, they decide to do something crazy. And this time they're complaining about pro-Islam messages in Texas textbooks. Wow. And how awful it is that people are trying to insert religion into the textbooks when the Texas school board's loaded with creationists trying to teach biblical fundamentalism in the textbooks. It's great. But I also talk about Doctor Who and whatever I feel like talking about. So there's all kinds of stuff in there. And it's a lot of fun to write. It's not as easy for me to post as often as I used to because of all the other stuff going on in my life. But I try to post at least twice a day and get some fun stuff in there. So subscribe. And I'm on Twitter, too, at Bad Astronomer. So there you go. I think that's everything.
You heard it, folks. And we're actually getting to the end of the show here. I think we've been going on for a little more than an hour, I think.
Yeah, we started late, though.
Yeah, we did start a little bit late.
You're just like, blah, 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 before
blah,
the show.
Blah, 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 blah. It's all recorded, though, so it's like great pre-show. Yeah. We'll probably have some post-show.
Yeah, if you edit this out to the actual content, it'll be about 30 seconds long.
Yeah, we're done. It's Nibiru. There, we're done.
Yeah, that's it.
So everyone who's been watching, thank you so much for watching. Phil, thank you for joining us today. Really do appreciate it. Everyone who wants more information about the skies above, make sure you visit badastronomy.com. Lots of information there when cool things happen. Lots of skeptical talk and lots of ranting. As Phil mentioned, exactly.
And watch Discovery Channel October 6th, Wednesday at 10 p.m. right after the Mythbusters season premiere, and you get Bad Universe Episode 2, Alien Attack.
Ooh, do you believe in aliens?
I don't believe in anything.
There you go, but, good answer.
But okay, I do think there are aliens out there, but I don't think they're visiting us. And you'll get an earful about that on the show.
I hope so. I do hope so. I hope people watch it. I'd love to hear what people think about it. And you know, it would be really neat to say, my friend Phil got a show on the Discovery Channel.
It's crazy. Great. It's just crazy. I can't even believe it sometimes. It's nuts.
Yeah, but you've been working at it for a long time, so.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it gets on there, definitely time worth it. Everyone else, we'll be back here next week with lots more science talk, another hour under the belt. I'm Dr. Kiki. If you want to download past episodes of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, you can find it at twit.tv/Kiki, K-I-K-I. Lots of episodes there. You can subscribe to multimedia formats and just, you know, and watch or listen to your heart's content. You can also find shows, old episodes on YouTube. We are on YouTube on the Twit channel. And additionally, you can also, if this 1 hour just isn't enough for you, you can also check out my show, This Week in Science, which the website is twis.org, This Week in Science. And that's another show that airs live here on the Twit Network. I'll see you next week. I think I'm turning into a little pumpkin here. And remember, 1 hour a week. That's all I ask. And it makes your life so much more interesting. Thanks, everyone.
All right, dozens of people know who I am. Yeah. All right, we should start the show.
Let's actually officially start the show.
It's like quarter after.
That's right. Exactly. Okay, moving on. I am recording. Yes, awesome.
You are actually recording?
I am. This whole thing has been recorded and will be played back later.
Oh, great. Oh, so okay. So I can't give away any state secrets or anything like that.
Yeah. Not unless you want to be caught.
I'm getting something from Astronomy Central.
Hmm.
Run for your lives. Okay. Are we done? That's it?
I was just going to start. Okay. Wait, I need a clean start. Okay.
I'm not going to give you one. Every time you start, I'm just going to start talking, rambling on and on.
Okay, ready?